Thanks for listening, Unplugged Army. I'm Louis Unga, General Manager at Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. We're proud to present Doug Fraun's Unplugged.
Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown Phoenix. Diamondbacks a loser, 3-2, and quite frankly, they had zero fight in them at all. They lose to the Rockies. Brandon fought terrible. 3 2/3 of an inning, gave up 3 earned runs, 6 hits, and struggled throughout. Manager Torrey Lovello.
Whether the energy was there or not, I felt like the guys were engaged. They were out there with the best intentions, just couldn't get the job done. It was just a very awkward feeling day.
Only 13,000 fans at the game. Sal Frank made his major league debut, 1 2/3 of an inning out of the bullpen, gave up 0 earned runs. Ketel Marte went 2-for-4 with 2 extra base hits. Diamondbacks tried to win the series against one of the worst teams in baseball at 12:40 today. Zach Davies will be on the hill against Chris Flexen. Now in the wild card standings, Philadelphia and San Francisco were losers, but they're on the extremes. It's the middle teams the Diamondbacks are fighting with, and Cubs, Reds, and Fish, all winners. So now your wild card standings, 4.5 game lead for the Phillies in first place, Cubs a 3.5 game lead. The final wild card spot is the Reds, with Miami now only a half game behind Cincinnati, Diamondbacks a full game out, and it's the Giants that have dropped the 2 games back. Loser once again, 100-77. Brittany Griner, 16 points, but as one of the tallest players on the court, she could only muster 2 rebounds. Sophie Cunningham and Diana Taurasi did not play. Head coach Nikki Blue.
I didn't think we gave our best effort like we usually do.
Wow. I don't know what their usually best effort is, considering they're the worst team in the entire WNBA. Washington went 13-23 from the 3-point line. Now the Mercury move on to Friday night again at home. So who's your starting quarterback? The offensive coordinator, Drew Petzing, still won't answer the question, but he says he's happy with everybody.
Yeah, it's been a great process. I mean, the guys in that room, I have a lot of faith in them, the way they work together, the type of personalities they bring to it. So it's been a lot of fun over these last couple weeks, and excited to see kind of where it goes moving forward.
Yeah, that's interesting. They say it's a competitive advantage to not let Washington know whether or not a fifth-round rookie is going to start or a guy on his 7th team in 6 years. I'm sure Washington's nervous no matter what. And then there's the sound bite of the year. Defensive coordinator Nick Rawls is describing his relationship on game day with the head coach Jonathan Gannon, and then he made this noise.
You think he'll be like, you thinking what I'm thinking? I'll be like, I don't know. What are you thinking? He'd be like, never mind. Just call. I was like, what are you thinking? Tell me what you're thinking. No, I don't know. So, but yeah, he gives me that ability, and I use him as a resource for sure.
Arizona is at Washington coming up Sunday at 10 in the morning. Andrew Barroway has had his domestic violence charges dropped in Colorado. He was arrested on second-degree felony and third-degree misdemeanor domestic violence charges. No reason for the dismissal was given. Andrew Barroway owns 5% of the Arizona Coyotes. Oh, top 25 is out. Colorado made the biggest leap. Florida State up 4, and Pac-12 has 6 teams in. And finally, what do you know when people have done the wrong thing and God finds out about it? 3 men in Boston, which is an area of Washington, D.C., made the decision that they found a victim and they're going to carjack his car. They yelled at him, throw your keys on the hood. The man put the keys on the hood and he walked away. And the 3 guys get in the car and then they run away. They couldn't drive a stick.
The official golf course of Doug Fraun's Unplugged is Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. I love that because it follows the tradition. that sponsors of Doug Franz Unplugged are members of the Unplugged Army. It's just so cool that such a high-end, gorgeous golf course is there for all of us. I don't care what your skill level is. A scratch golfer will be challenged, and a golfer as bad as me is not going to be embarrassed. Go to whirlwindgolf.com and feel the wind. And tell them you're in the Unplugged Army. If you go to Bell's Nashville Kitchen for the food, you're going to be shocked what a great bar it is. And if you go to Bell's Nashville Kitchen because you want to experience a great country bar, you're going to be shocked at how great the food is. And if you want something different to do this weekend, on Sunday, head out to Bell's Nashville Kitchen, Main Street, Old Town Scottsdale, and they got the car show in which they actually shut down the street a little bit. Cars that are pre-1990, plus they've got pastries and they've got coffee. And you can walk in later for the honky-tonk brunch and have a great meal at Bell's Nashville Kitchen. You found home. Down home.
I'm so entertained by this, but you see, hey, we're stealing your car. Wait, it's a stick shift. Do you know how to drive a stick? No, I don't know. Do you know how to drive a stick? No, I don't know how to drive a stick. We just stole this car. What do we do? Run! It's just idiot. Oh, I love dumb crooks in the morning. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast and TV show in the world that totally covers, that is totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city that drops on your phone each and every weekday morning and television. We also cover ASU, U of A, GCU. The Rattlers, the Rising, and the Merc. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. I am hoping, not guaranteeing, but hoping to get to the day game today, Diamondbacks and Rockies, and really get a feel for the team today. Because, man, last night, just no fight whatsoever. I hate that. And Torrey Lovello made some decisions yesterday that just got on my nerves. There's a lot of things to talk about Diamondbacks-wise, a lot of Cardinal stuff. We're a pretty packed show. How's your week going? My week's going very strangely, to be quite honest. I feel like I haven't even seen my wife this week. She sings with the Phoenix Symphony on Mondays. So she was doing that Monday, and then Monday was a heavy work day because I didn't work at all after the show Friday, and then I worked only about 6 hours on Saturday, and then took the rest of Saturday night off. Didn't do a thing on Sunday. And that's rare, but it was, you know, Labor Day weekend. And then on Monday, heavy work day. I put in, I don't know, 14, 15 hours on Monday to get caught up from the weekend. So she was busy all day. I didn't see her. And then being, you know, the wonderful human being taking care of herself that she is, she gets off of work at about 5:30 downtown, drove to the wigwam and worked out. And then she didn't get home until like 8. And then she immediately went to work. And I was working upstairs. I didn't see her at all. I did cheat for an hour, though. I did cheat and watch Ahsoka, and that was finally a good episode if you're a Star Wars person. I have not enjoyed Ahsoka, but I want to be, I don't know, it's kind of one of those things you do with your kids, even though your kids aren't even there, because the girls and I talk about it. And so finally, that became worth it. It was a long, drawn-out thing to try to finally get to that, for that to be important. But that's it for me. Heavy work week. Hopefully everything's going thrilling for you on your end. And I am I haven't been to a Diamondbacks game in a little while. I usually go to one game, a homestand, and I think I've missed the last two homestands. So I'm excited to finally get out to a game. It's an amazing stretch. Boy, did they blow it. Like, the Marlins got back into this thing by sweeping a terrible team in the Nationals, and yet the Diamondbacks couldn't sweep the Rockies. And then their next trips, they do Chicago, New York twice. Isn't that weird? Chicago and New York twice. They've got Cubs, Yankees, White Sox, Mets, I think. I might be wrong and it's Cubs, Mets, but I think it's Cubs, Yankees, and then on their next trip, White Sox, Mets. Then they also end the year with three at home against Houston. brutal. So to lose a game to the Rockies, oh man, that's brutal. I don't have a lot of non-sports stuff, I don't think. I can't remember. You know, like, usually crazy things happen in my life, and nothing particularly crazy happened. So, sound credits this morning. AZCardinals.com is where we got the Drew Petsing, offensive coordinator, and Nick Rawlis sound. And we also have sound that I was planning on using yesterday, but I ran out of time. So, we got some DJ Humphreys, some Zaven Collins, and I think... that's it. Yeah, that's it from yesterday's show that I didn't get to.
We got a little bit of CKD, too, that you didn't get to.
Yeah, yeah. Dillingham from Sun Devil Source I want to get to. It's kind of funny. I've got a couple Kenny Dillingham from yesterday's practice and a lot from his Monday press conference. So we've got two things of Kenny Dillingham to get to. Nothing thrilling from Jed Fish. Jeff Rogers, the special teams coach and assistant head coach, spoke from the Cardinals. I didn't hear anything from him that I thought you would, it would be earth shattering for you. So if you want to hear it, go to azcardinals.com, but I admit I'm not going to play it. Torrey Lovello spoke on MLB.tv, and we've got some of that. I'm excited to get to that because he said one thing that was pretty interesting. I thought he had a good post-game press conference. I did not think he had a good game. Obviously, I wish those would be flipped. I'd rather rip him for the post-game press conference for what he says after a win or something like that, as opposed to where it's going to go. And we have Nikki Blue, the head coach of the Phoenix Mercury. And I actually have one comment from her about the Phoenix Mercury to talk about today that I thought was very strange. All right, let's roll.
Doug's Big One.
Doug's Big One this morning. I'm just so not a fan of games. Just not a fan at all of games. I look at Jonathan Gannon and Drew Petsing and this idea that they're getting a competitive advantage over Washington by not announcing who their starting quarterback is. It's just laughable to me, okay? Number one, I am not reporting. I could be wrong on this, but there is no doubt in my mind of who the starting quarterback is. When you have a fifth-round pick who has kind of totally not looked very good, Clayton Toon, in the preseason, and then had a horrific fumble, and you even show your hand by making a trade trying to get another quarterback. Could just really think about this for a second. Why would you go get another quarterback if you felt strongly about the quarterbacks that you do have? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So we know you didn't like your quarterback room and you went out and you made a move. And then if it's somebody that already has a history in your system, I feel like you're sitting in a room and you say, you know, Josh Dobbs is the kind of guy that we can go get right now and plug him in and we're going to be okay. So there's no doubt to me it's Josh Dobbs. And then you look at, if you're Washington, you're going to look at film from everything that the Browns have done while Drew Petsing was a quarterback coach. And you know that's what he wants to be able to do, because why would you want to go get a guy that ran your Browns offense if that's not what you're going to be doing? Everything points to Joshua Dobbs. And yet this idea, oh, we're sneaking it up on the Redskins. The Commanders. That shows you I'm a fan that slipped out. It's just, now I still use the phrase Redskins when I'm referring to old Washington stuff, and then I use football team, and then I try to use Commanders for the modern day, but that one was just a slip, so I apologize. I just think this is silly. I think this is so silly. Now let's get to the actual Arizona Cardinals and some of the things that were said over the last couple days, okay? I want to start with Zaven Collins. This is kind of an interesting quote, and I want you to hear this as it relates to, let me change that, not as it relates to. This is Zaven Collins talking about Jonathan Gannon and who he is and the relationship and the things he says and the accountability and things like that. And again, I feel like I'm the only person in the world that is out there on this island not ripping the Cardinals for Jonathan Gannon's opening speech. I read a story in Pro Football Talk that was just torching Jonathan Gannon and his inability to motivate. And I thought, guys, number one, you got the wrong players if you need the coach to motivate. Number two, I don't think it matters if you motivate guys getting ready to watch film and have another meeting after a meeting. It's just, it's so minor. I think what motivates is accountability and winning. And when they see the discipline is working, that's the motivation. You don't need a big speech. But I think it's important, based on the context of where we are now nationally with people's opinion of Jonathan Gannon, to hear what Zaven Collins has to say about Jonathan Gannon. Here you go.
He's very straight to the point. No funny business. He just kind of tries to be honest with us as much as he can as a head coach, and just talks to us each directly. If he doesn't like what he's seeing, he'll tell you. He's not going to tell someone to tell you to tell them. And, you know, he doesn't go like that. He's just going to walk straight to you and say, this is how it gets to get done. You know, and anything that he messes up on, he says it right in front of us, that, hey, I screwed this up. I got to be better here. And he doesn't just hold, you know, players accountable. He holds his coaching staff accountable, physical performance, all those coaches accountable, the athletic training staff, all of them, everyone accountable.
That might seem like a small thing, but let's put it in context. The speech that was part of the Cardinals' flight plan, we played it for you yesterday. You might have seen it because it did go, I don't want to say viral, but a lot of people watched it, in which he asked who rode the bus and who drove, which I believe is meaning they probably had a bus leave from the facility for the first day of check-in at the Wigwam on the west side, and while other guys felt like driving their own car, so they'd have their own car at the Wigwam. And that's kind of one of those things to say, where are you at in life? Where do you want to go? And whether or not you're, you know, how close together you are, things like that. There's a lot of reasons why he might have went down that road. And then he said, I hope there's a fire in your gut when you got here, and if not, you better get it burning. And everybody thought, boy, that's just terrible. I listened to Zaven Collins, and I listened to what the guys have said the whole time, and all I hear is, we know this is real football now. This is so dramatically different than the joke of the Keim and Cliff regime that now they've bought in. And I don't need some speech that happened 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, to determine whether or not I think the players are going to play hard for Jonathan Gannon. Now, when I'm saying this to you, please bear in mind, I think the Cardinals are going to win 3 games at most. I really like 2. I think this team is completely devoid of talent, and there's no way I'm going to trust a rookie head coach and 2 rookie coordinators to make up for that lack of talent. So I am extremely low on the Arizona Cardinals. You can still be low and think you've got the right coaches in place that will grow with a good general manager at some point. So those are 2 totally different things. So I would rather take the comments of some of the players now than the comments of non-players watching a highlight film. But speaking of which, how bad did the Cardinals production staff do of using that as their beginning? I mean, I realize you have exclusive audio and you think, hey, this is awesome. We're going to have a chance to mic up the head coach for his first speech to the guys. Man, this is awesome. You got to be able to listen to that and decide, you know what, this really isn't that good. So let's just not use it. And not open up the entire organization to criticism. That's kind of more on the staff or NFL Films or whoever did that than it really is Jonathan Gannon. I have no issues with Gannon whatsoever.
That's funny you say that, because I was thinking the same exact thing. Like, surely they could have found a different type of audio bite that was better than that.
I think so, too.
I thought the same thing.
And this is where a lot of people, it's a good point, and you know more about this kind of stuff than I do, Jeff, but this is the kind of thing where I think a lot of people get happy on what they think they're going to get, and then they use it anyway. Hey, we're going to get the coach's first speech to the players. Yeah, here we go. This is exclusive, man. This is what the fans want. We've got to use it. And you've got to have the ability to look at that and say, you know what, this just isn't very good. It doesn't matter that we have it. Let's not use it. And instead, they ran with it. And I think that's the group to kind of go after a little bit. Now, as I say that, let me be fair. That's probably the worst mistake I've ever seen that group make. As easy it is to rip the Cardinals, as easy it is for me to tell you with the things that I know behind the scenes of how bad I think their ownership is, one thing they crush is the department of kind of broadcasting, whether we're talking about play-by-play of the games on radio. I don't really like their color guy very much, but the somebody's going to take me seriously on that. Hopefully you don't. I'm still a dear friend. I'm being funny, and then I realized somebody's going to take that like I was really being serious. The production of their radio shows that they do and the production quality of the things that the videos they put on their website, things like that, I think they're top-notch. I just thought that was a bad decision. Now, let's have some fun with this. DJ Humphreys is talking about a lot of different things and then talking about leadership and then talking about Kelvin Beachum. And then suddenly somebody asks whether or not Beachum is a better golfer or if DJ Humphreys is the better golfer between the two of them. And we get kind of an inside look.
Beach for sure. For sure. I'm strictly like, I'm all talent. You know what I mean? So, like, it's no technique, though. It's, like, accidental talent. Like, this is just, like, I'm athletic. Like, I'm just hitting the ball at the right spot. But, like, we're going to go 3 holes, 4 shots, those kind of shots. And then it starts, that thing starts slicing a little. But my putt gets serious, though, at that point. So it's kind of like a give and take. It's like, if I want to putt good, get on the sauce a little bit. If I don't want to putt good, I want to keep striking them. Just hang out. Hang out with the Gatorade. Yeah, so it's you know, it's ebb and a flow.
So that's why everybody loves DJ Humphreys. I've never heard of something like that, though. I strike it better sober, but then I can't putt. But after a couple shots, and then he goes, and if you're listening right now to the podcast and on Amazon, Google, Spotify, and you're not actually watching on WTSM TV, he says, and then after a couple shots, and then he goes, I don't mean these shots. And he takes his arm and he kind of does the arc of a golf ball, saying, I'm not talking about a golf shot, basically. I'm talking about an alcoholic shot, to explain. And then he goes, so I got to decide. If I need to putt better, I need to get on the sauce a little bit. But then I know I'm not going to be striking. He keeps saying striking. You know, when most people say you striped it, he keeps going, well, then, if I want to strike it well, then I stay on the Gatorade. I just thought you should hear that to know how entertaining he is. And then he was asked a question about the butterflies. He was asked a question about getting excited for the season and whether or not he feels it already, finally here, week one is coming, and what is he like on game day?
Oh, yes. I get butterflies for, like, every, like, I get butterflies for practice. Like, it doesn't, like, I'm, this is, this, my, that was something that Larry told me a long time ago. I remember asking him, that's like one of the first, like, rookie questions I asked Larry. Like, man, you still get nervous for games, bro? He's like, bro, the moment I stop getting nervous for games, I'm going home. Like, I still get nervous. I still have, like I'm about to throw up before the game, like, all of that. And I still, the same way, every morning before a game in the hotel room, I, like, dry heave for, like, 30 minutes. And then when I get done, I'm like, all right, let's roll. It's time to get after it. You know what I mean? But that's how I know, like, all right, it's time to get after it. 30 minutes before the game. Yeah. Like, when it's time to go down, we got to go to breakfast at 8:30, 8 o'clock. Nothing's coming up. I'm just sweating profusely, just like in there, like feel like I'm about to pass out, and then like something hits me. I'm like, all right, I'm good. Let's go eat some breakfast. Let's get after it.
What gets you worked up about it? Are you worried about giving up a sack? Or
no, I think I just, like, I have such high expectations for myself in my head. Like, all week, all I do is just play out what I see myself doing in the game. And I think it's just like I get myself riled up because it's like I've made this, like, immaculate game in my head that I'm about to go. Now I have to go do it. Like, you know what I mean? So I know I can do it because I've seen myself do it. So now I have to go actually do it. And I think that I just get so anxious. Like, I want to go out and do so well. It just makes me like, ah. But it's like, it's a good nervous. So I love it, yeah.
Big fan. I'm a big fan of DJ Humphreys, and it shows you what a fun dude he is. Now, when I say big fan, I'm a big fan of the person. Do I think he's an elite left tackle? No, I don't. The team has. Now, I don't know if it's Steve Keim just blowing smoke, but the whole time Steve Keim was there, granted, it's his first-round pick, but all he wanted to do is talk about how great DJ Humphreys was doing. I think he's okay. I mean, I'm not saying, boy, this is a mistake. They haven't been able to replace him yet. At the same time, to think that his job should be safe for years to come, I'm not on that bandwagon either. I would perfectly be fine by drafting another tackle and moving Paris Johnson next year over to left tackle. So those were from 2 days ago. Now let's get into the Cardinals from today. There's one Drew Petsing quote that I did not ask CEO Chris or Jeff Weir Production to pull. And now that I heard that, reminded about that DJ Humphries, I should have had him pull it. And that is Drew Petsing talking about his game day and whether or not he's got the butterflies, especially in his first game as an offensive coordinator. And he talked about that it doesn't matter that he's an offensive coordinator. He gets jacked up for game day all the time. And it's important to him to check his emotions. And he just admitted, you got to be honest with yourself because there's a fire and how important that is. It was really cool because Drew Petsing, as you're going to hear in a minute, is kind of a boring dude press conference-wise. You can tell he's really smart by what he says, but he hardly ever says anything. And that was a quote where he actually opened up a little bit. The one I definitely want you to hear. I'll let you decide how you feel about this, and then I'll tell you how I feel about it. Almost every offensive coordinator in the world scripts out their first 10 to 15 plays. And the reason why that is so important is because you rep them in practice. It doesn't just mean you write down, here are our 10 to 15 plays. It means you've gone over it at length. You've set up maybe 25 plays that you think will get your quarterback in a rhythm and that will attack weaknesses that you have noticed on film in the defense. Then the quarterback and you watch them in practice. And then the quarterback communicates, here's the ones I like, here's the ones I don't like. You funnel the game plan together and you get your first 10 to 15 scripted. It's just like, that's how everybody does it. Bill Walsh started it, and everybody scripts out the first 10 to 15, and then you're repping them in practice so everybody knows what's coming, blah, blah, blah. So when Drew Petsing was asked about scripting out plays, he didn't sound nearly as hard and fast to it.
Yeah, I think there's a balance there. I think you always kind of have an idea of how you think the flow of the game is going to go and certain things that you want to come up early or certain plays that you want to use in certain ways. But I think there's also an element to understanding the flow of the game and the players you have. And, you know, those first one or two plays maybe come off the sheet. But after that, the situation is going to dictate a lot of what's going on. We may be in the red zone. We may be in a second and long, you know, so those things can certainly change the direction you go as a play caller.
You have the first, you know, let's say 10 plays scripted, but really after your first one or two, what happens if you're in a second and long? What if you're in the red zone already? What if you're backed up amongst your own amid your own goal line? What do you do then? Now, maybe those plays aren't there. And he made it sound like, when he said, I have an idea, that they're not as beholden to the script. And I have two things I got to say on this. Number one, I do like it, but maybe not for a first-year offensive coordinator. I kind of like the idea of a first-year offensive coordinator having that script just so totally focused already. Already put in place so every player knows this is the play that's coming. This is, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this. And of course, if you've got your third play of the game as a run and it's 3rd and 17, maybe you're not going to do that play. You're going to call a play that you think might get some chunk yards and possibly break it for a first down. But now you've lost that opportunity. I get it. Yet I am kind of excited about the confidence that an offensive coordinator in his first ever game has by hinting, I don't need this script. I'm going to be watching what happens. And after my first play or two, I'm going to already be able to look at that defense and decide, let's do this, let's do that. And whenever somebody in their first year is willing to break a trend, whenever someone in their first year is willing to do something nobody else does, on the one hand, you do kind of have to look at it and say, do you have any clue what you're doing? Like, are you really good enough to be different than the great play callers of football? Are you sure? Yet, I like the confidence that says I don't have to do it like everybody else. Am I being a little hypocritical? No. Am I being a little bit middle of the road and having a soft opinion? Yeah, I am. I admit it. But I want to like it. And I really like this coaching staff. You're not going to get me to, what do I want to say? Be so supportive of it like it's going to work early. I think it'll work eventually. But the things they're saying, the things they're doing, it's different than the normal coaching staff. And I think that's exactly what this franchise needs. Let's go to the other coordinator now. That was the offensive coordinator, Drew Petzing. Here's the defensive coordinator, and Nick Rollins. And one simple conversation that actually he kind of opens up into a lot of different things. The first question only took about 5 seconds into the press conference, and Nick Rollins was just asked, you've done both so far in the preseason, so what's your plan for the regular season? Are you going to be up in the booth, or are you going to be down on the field?
Field. I like it down there. I kind of hit on that in the preseason, too, because I talked about I was a booth guy my whole career except for 1 year, and I hated it, right? So I was like, booth. But when you can stand as a play caller, you don't necessarily have to stand with your position to make sure that you're getting the guys in and out of the game, right? And so, poor position coaches, poor Sam coaching the backers, right? He's got to stand somewhere between the sticks. And I just felt like as a play caller, when you can stand, it depends on where the ball is on the field, either standing behind the defense or the offense, you can see it a little bit better. And we got great coaches that are upstairs that can give me any information that I needed that I don't see, but I felt like I could see enough information that I needed to see on the field. And I love being there with the players on the field as well, whether that's corrections, whether that's just feeling the tone or the vibe I'm getting from the players, like that's important for to be able to connect with those guys, in my opinion. So, field.
Hope you want this. Okay, maybe you don't. I hope you want this. This is kind of one of those deep dives into just about 45 seconds of what a coach said. And if you have either been an assistant coach in football or ever played football, you're going to know this really easy. But for those of you that love football but maybe don't know it perfectly well, I like how many things he opened up so you kind of get into his mind a little bit. He's used to, as a coach, being up in the booth. And he likes that better. And as a defensive coach, you can see things a lot better. You can figure out route trees a lot better. You can kind of see better of what they're trying to exploit, especially in the run game. And you like that. So you want to be upstairs. However, when you're downstairs, you actually get to look people in the eye. You actually get to tell your defensive captain, what are you seeing? This is what I want. Why aren't we doing it? Things like that. Versus barking down to a position coach and hoping the position coach translates your feelings directly to the player the way you want them conveyed. Then he talked about you have to stand there with your position group. What he means by that is basically when you're on defense, you'll have your defensive line coach on the sideline standing right at the line of scrimmage, and he's surrounded by his defensive linemen that are not in the game. So whenever there's a sub, you're being able to call out who you want in the game. Right next to him is the linebackers coach and the linebackers, and then is the defensive backs coach and the defensive backs. So you might hear in your ear, 11, 11, nickel, nick, whatever. Like everybody's got a different call. But what that means would be that the offense is in 11 personnel. And that those numbers, 11 doesn't, like, they always have 11 people. What 11 personnel is, each number, there's not a tens place and a ones place when you hear personnel. That's just simply a signifier to the number of running backs that are in the game and the number of tight ends that are in the game. So therefore, if it's one running back, one tight end, there's three other offensive weapons left. They're all wide receivers. So you say 11, 11, nickel. That means you are calling out a nickel. So you want five defensive backs. That means you'll have a slot corner. That means immediately the defensive backs coach is putting in his nickel defense. He's not even paying attention to the rest of the offense. He's making sure he's got his correct guys in the game, his guys off the game. Well, that's why the defensive coordinator, Nick Rawlins, thought he was going to be up in the booth, because the times he has been either a position coach or a position assistant, he felt like, I can't really see what's going on because I'm just so narrow-minded into this group. He realized when he was on the field, as long as he didn't stand on the line of scrimmage, because on the line of scrimmage, you hardly see anything. I only, as a sideline reporter for ASU for about 8 or 9 years, whatever it was, I only stood on the line of scrimmage at the goal line. Then I wanted to see the surge of the O-line, and I wanted to see if the ball was able to cross the plane or if a guy was down when he fumbled. So I would stand right on the line of scrimmage then. Every other time, I wanted to be as far away from the line of scrimmage as I could so I could see the angles of the run blocking and at least the route tree on my side of the field. I couldn't really see the route tree on the far side of the field. So now Nick Rawlins has described that once he didn't have a position group responsibility as the defensive coordinator, he would back away from the line of scrimmage and be able to see at those angles that I feel like I know so well and say, that's where I can see. So now the benefits of staring somebody in the face, the benefits of one-on-one communication, the benefits of understanding the true vibe of the team at that moment, it can affect your play calling. You might know, my team needs a big play right now. I'm going to draw up a blitz and try to make it happen, or call a blitz and try to make it happen. I'm going to do this now, whatever it might be. You get a more of a feeling than you do up in the booth. However, you get a better view on the booth. So for him, his view down the sideline away from the line of scrimmage was a good enough view that he's okay taking away that advantage that a booth view has in order for all the other advantages that I've already described being on the field. Hopefully you like that deep dive into everything Nick Rawlins meant right there. The other one, I got two more from Nick Rawlins. You might have heard this in the four-minute offense. What are you thinking? I just thought that was hysterical. So I had to play it for you. This is it in a long context. And he's asked about his relationship with Jonathan Gannon on game day, the communication between the two and how well it's going. And I think Nick Rawlins is such a normal person. This is not your average coaching kind of guy. He's just a normal dude that knows a lot of football. I like that about him. I think this is why he relates to his players very well, because he's fun. Because name a defensive coordinator that's going to admit this, just like you and I. And here's what I mean. Imagine you and your boss, and it's easy for you to say, do you know what I'm thinking? And your boss says, yep, let's go for it, or you know, whatever. And yet, if your boss ever says to you, you know, do you know what I'm thinking? Aren't you kind of like, I better get this right. I better get this right. My coach, my boss is trusting me to think like him. And that's exactly what Nick Rawlins is talking about right here.
No, he's phenomenal. He lets me go, but I definitely will pose him with some questions like, JG, you thinking this here? And I love having that resource. And honestly, I do it with my entire staff too. And he's obviously over with us, and you know the continuity between us helps, because a lot of times I'm thinking he's thinking what I'm thinking, and I like that verification of, hey, you thinking this here? And he's like, do it. Or sometimes he'll be like, you thinking what I'm thinking? I'll be like, I don't know. What are you thinking? He'd be like, never mind, just call. I was like, what are you thinking? Tell me what you're thinking. No, I don't know. So, but yeah, he gives me that ability, and I use him as a resource for sure.
There are not a lot of defensive coordinators that are going to open up like that to the media, that he really is wondering, okay, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Oh, no, and now I've called something and I don't know if that's what you're thinking. That's real, and that's why he's relatable. None of this means you're going to win, but it does mean players, they might not admit it, they do play harder for guys that they relate to, because they totally believe that person has your best interests. If you're a boss and your employees don't believe you have their best interest in mind, unless you're overpaying them, they don't trust you. I mean, you can act like, hey, I have a great relationship. No, you don't, actually. And when you see Drew Petzing and you see Nick Rawls and the way that they communicate, it makes a lot of sense on why I'm hearing good things about the relationship between coaches and players. Now, keep this. This is really important. It's September, okay? There's been zero animosity or adversity of any real type that affects a team. How are they going to be when they're 1-5? How well is the communication? How well is the fun? How well do they think they're being used as a player? Because a player, they know not to admit this publicly, but if they've got 5 sacks and the team's 0-5, the individual guy is kind of like, yeah, it stinks we lost. But I know I'm getting paid at the end of the season. I mean, that's how they think. This is a job. This is a business. If the team goes 16-0 and you stink, you're still the one getting cut. So they try to say all the time, hey, you know, I can go 0-4, and as long as we win, I'm happy. Yeah, no, they're not really. That's a lie. That's a lie. They can say it all they want. That's a lie. Because they know if they don't start hitting, they're cut. A football player knows if the team keeps winning and they keep dropping passes, they're cut. And a player knows if I have 10 receptions and 120 yards and the team goes 0-16, I'm still getting paid next year. Maybe not by the team I'm on, but I'm getting paid by somebody. Okay? That stuff happens. So in order to get the most out of a player, there needs to be that relationship that you're relating to each other. And I get the feeling these coaches do now. Let's see if they can continue to do it with adversity. But still, it still all rolls into Doug's big one that the team is terrible, the talent is terrible. Michael Bidwell was terrible as an owner to keep Steve Keim for as long as he did. Keim completely checked out mentally, and there are so many weaknesses in this roster that there's no way Monty Ossenfort can fill it in a year. And I think this hiding of the starting quarterback because it dramatically affects Washington's prep is such a waste of time. But hey, if you guys like the intrigue and act like we're not going to be surprised when Joshua Dobbs comes running out as the starting quarterback, whatever. Doug Franz not reporting that Joshua Dobbs is going to be the starting quarterback. I am, again, not reporting, but Joshua Dobbs will be the starting quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. And then you can rip me coming up on Monday morning if I'm wrong. But listen, it's done. He is, without a doubt. All right, coming up next. This was not must win. Unless you have a high baseball IQ, complete focus, and a hatred of losing, then it was. But clearly the Diamondbacks don't have those things. That's next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. I'm sure all three people wish it was a little different. But I gotta say, I was watching, if you're listening to the podcast right now, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, you didn't see this. But if you're watching us on WTSM-TV, we just came in a commercial break, and there was a promotional announcement, we call it promos in the business, of the main event, Steve McCollum coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. And I was just staring at his bald head after I had made a quick conversation with Chris, CEO Chris, and his bald head. And then I had a conversation quickly with Jeff Weir Production and his bald head. And then, of course, sitting down and I see Steve McCollum's bald head. These are three men that have just, they just do bald. And I'm such an ugly bald man.
Do we do it well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel creepy saying that, but yeah, you do. And I just... Like, here, I'll give you the visual if you haven't seen it. I'm an ugly bald man, and it makes it even worse. And I don't mind telling you this. I've always told you this. I'm either I'm not modest. I'm not arrogant. I'm just honest. I mean, like, boom. If I'm better than you at something, I'll tell you I'm better than you. And if you are better than me at something, I won't talk trash at all. Like, it's so amazing to me how many people I have told for years I'm a terrible golfer and I love golf. And yet, somebody plays with me, and they're like, wow, you really are bad. Well, what did you think terrible meant? I mean, that's what it means. I'm a terrible golfer. Well, you play all the time. Actually, I don't play all the time. I play about twice a month. But you now in the dead of summer, I play about twice a week. But once training camp starts at the end of July, I'm too busy then, and I usually play about twice a month. So having said that, I'm terrible. Well, I don't mind telling you this. When I was like 19, 20, 25 years old, man, I was a good-looking dude. Just deal with it. Whether you want to hear that or not, just deal with it. I was a very good-looking dude. And I'm losing the hair. It bothers me. So yeah, I wear a hat. If I could wear a hat in church without Jesus on the crucifix looking down at me and burning a hole in my hat, I would wear a hat in church. Okay? I hate looking at myself in the mirror without a hat on, and then therefore I don't want anybody else to see it. I don't like being ugly. And just looking at the three of you, and you guys just seem comfortable with your boldness, and I just wanted to say I'm jealous. Totally jealous.
I think you look fantastic.
Well, wow. Wow. Well, that's because I have a hat on. So, anyway, let's get to Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks a loser yesterday, 3-2. This is the official scorecard. It's not really the official because the official would be from the official scorer. But my official scorecard from yesterday's game. And I would like to point out there. I'm going to point right there on my scorecard. You see that? Well, you want to zoom in on that, Jeff? If you're listening, I was moving around the scorecard, so there was no chance to zoom in. What I was pointing at was the last hit of the ball game for the Diamondbacks. So they took on a young man by the name of Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland, God bless him and his family, and Mr. and Mrs. Freeland, I'm sorry for insulting your son. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, does a lot for charity. But he's just not a good pitcher. Just the way it is. He's not good at his job. Now, have there been days I'm not good at my job? Absolutely. I wish I was paid, you know, $7 million a year to stink. But you know what? Okay, that's life. More power than you, you know, more power to him. I'm jealous. So Kyle Freeland's not good at his job. And yet, the Arizona Diamondbacks did nothing against this man. And what was even crazier, his leadoff hitter, Ketel Marte, hits a triple, which, in my opinion, he should not have gone to third if Ketel cares about my opinion. And then Emmanuel Rivera gets his first hit in about 2 months. So in two batters, you got a runner on first, and it's 1-0. They score one run the rest of the game against a pitcher that not only have they shelled before, but here's the kicker. The rest of the league destroys. Everybody beats Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland came into the game with a 5.18 ERA. That means he's giving up about 5 runs a game when he pitches 9 innings. You know how often he pitches 9 innings? Never. That's how bad of a season he is having. And yet, one of two things happened last night. And this needs to be... This is a really important point. The way to beat Kyle Freeland and the way to beat the Rockies is very simple, especially in Game 2 of a series. Not quite as important in Game 3, but very important in Game 2. You wreck their bullpen. You take pitches because you know Freeland isn't good enough. When you're facing a great pitcher, okay? I don't know who you... When I say great pitcher, who's the first person that comes to mind? If you know anything about me, you're going to know I'm weird. So the first name that comes to my mind is Walter Johnson. Okay? I'm sure it's not the first person that comes to your mind. But when a dude gets 417 wins, okay, we can settle on he's great. You might have went immediately a lot more modern and went with Justin Verlander, went with... Max Scherzer, somebody in that realm, whoever you think is great, okay? When you face a guy like that, you're only going to get one or two bad pitches an inning, like really hittable pitches in a whole inning. So you look for your spot, and if he throws a pitch into your spot, whether it's the first pitch of the at-bat or the seventh pitch of the at-bat, you get ready to jump on it. Because that might be the only good pitch you see in an hour. Go for it. So I don't get on guys when they swing at the first pitch against a great pitcher. Because you want to make sure, A, that guy doesn't get into a rhythm, and B, that might be the only good hittable pitch you see. When you're going up against a Kyle Freeland, let me say this. I don't want to be rude to anybody. I don't want to get personal. But let me just be clear. If you swing at the first pitch against Kyle Freeland, you're an idiot. You are a selfish freak show. There. And for some reason, the Diamondbacks are too afraid to look their team in the face and say that. He's not a good enough pitcher to get three balls past you if you know anything about hitting. So therefore, you take until you get two strikes, or you pick your zone. That's it. And I mean, you narrow that zone. And it's got to be a fastball at this quadrant, and anything else, even if it's a strike, you take it. I don't care if it's a meaty fastball on the inside corner. If you're an outside guy, then you only swing at the pitch in your zone until he gets to two strikes. Then it becomes okay. All field approach. I don't care where you pitch it. I'm not only going to protect, but I'm still going to try to drive a ball wherever it's pitched. And you work him. You work him. You work him. Now, here's where my concern is. This is only a one-game sample out of 162 games. But there's only three categories you can use to describe yesterday's game. Either the Diamondbacks employ the dumbest scouts in baseball, and they had a clueless game plan into yesterday. You decide if that's it. So maybe the game plan was jump on them early. Go after the first or second pitch. Okay? If that's the case, they're all idiots. Or the approach was, hey, take pitches, work the count, make him beat you, pick your spot, and don't give up your spot until there are two strikes. If that's the game plan, then who are the selfish jerks you've employed? Yes, I don't like to say the word jerk, but what else should I say? Can you even fathom how selfish it is to not follow the game plan? To say, I'm about ready to win the Triple Crown. I know hitting so much better than my scouts, my hitting coach, my manager, and all of my teammates. So I'm going to swing at the second pitch of the at-bat because I know better than all of you. The batting averages for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Ketel Marte batting 274. Rivera batting 262. Hasn't had a hit in about 5 weeks. Tommy Pham 257. Christian Walker 271. And with his power numbers, I'm okay with Christian Walker batting 271. Evan Longoria batting 232. But he's your designated hitter. Torrey Lovello said, wow, I want to designate you to hit since you're batting 232. Lourdes Gurriel batting 255. Don't tell me he's an all-star. Tell me that he's batting 255. Corbin Carroll batting 282. Wonderful for a rookie. Yes, rookie of the year. But still, 282 doesn't say I get to swing whenever I want. Nick Ahmed batting 215. By the way, Torrey, you're not even competing as a manager whenever you write the name Nick Ahmed into a lineup. You're not competing. Okay, it's September 5th. Now you might say, Doug, it's September 6th. No, I'm talking about yesterday when he put Nick Ahmed in. It's September 5th. You're not a playoff team as of game time. Why does somebody else need a day off? And don't tell me, well, Doug, it's a left-handed pitcher, and we like to bat a righty again. It's Nick Ahmed! I'm a right-handed hitter. Why did you put me in the lineup? Nick Ahmed's glove is half of what it used to be, and his bat is half of what it ever was. You do not play Nick Ahmed if you want to win the game. Mr. and Mrs. Ahmed, thank you for Nick. He has been an incredible representative of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He doesn't belong in a Ring of Honor or a Hall of Fame, but he deserves a handshake of a guy that cared about the game, tried as hard as he could every night. He's somebody to respect as a baseball player. I'm sorry, he stinks right now. Torrey Lovello, it's your job as the manager to have these hard moments, hard decisions, where you have to look at somebody that you greatly respect. And you have to look at that player and be honest with them and say, you're playing if there's an injury. That's it. or you're playing if I take somebody else out of the lineup in a matchup, let another pinch hitter bat who's terrible defensively. And then, as a last-ditch effort, I'm going to be playing you. But what I need from you is great leadership, great focus, and I can't have you whining about it. And you've always got to be ready, because I don't know when you're going into a game. But you've always got to be ready. That's how you handle it. And that's what a good manager does. And, Torrey, you have – I'm sorry. This second half of the season, you've stunk. You've really stunk. Let me go back to the batting averages again. And Gabby Moreno is batting .284, which is fantastic. Mike Hayes in great trade. That's the batting average. We don't have any players in this lineup batting .290. The number 8 hitter is batting .284. He's your best hitter on the team in your starting lineup. .284. And you guys are swinging at the first and second pitch against Kyle Friedland. Oh, there's a third reason. Remember I said there's three reasons why that you would have this game plan set up the way you did. Either you've got idiots as scouts, selfish players that ignore the actual idea, or you have guys that just plain choked. That does happen. You want it so bad, and you hate the losing that's gone on, and you selfishly think, I can do this. I can do this. You got there with your confidence. Now you're going to go on the offensive. You're going to jump the pitch, and you just choke because you couldn't handle the pressure of actually doing it the right way. Those are the three things. Well, number one, this team has been choking for years. For years. The collection of talent, when they rarely have been in a playoff situation, had just fallen on their face. And last night was one of those games where you just have to shake your head and say, organization, what are you doing? And why isn't anybody from top to bottom in that organization saying this isn't acceptable? Losing happens, okay? When the season begins, it's almost a written guarantee. Everybody's going to lose 62 games, and everybody's going to win 62. It's kind of an old joke in baseball, and you can make fun of this. It's a Yogi Berra type of comment, even though Yogi never said this one. You're going to win 62 games, you're going to lose 62 games, and it's those middle 62 games that matter. The reason why that's a made-up joke, because that would mean you would play about 186 games or whatever that math works out to, and you don't play 186 games. But you see the point. Everybody's going to win and lose a lot of games in baseball. So last night, losses happen. But what my beef has been since July 1st is the way this team has lost. Either lack of focus, lack of desire, or just plain stupidity. That's what's happened from July 1st on. They had a little bit of a stretch against a couple bad teams where they started to play better and you started to feel good. Boom. Right now, if you look at the race, it's six teams, okay? Phillies, Cubs, Reds have the three wild card spots. Marlins, Diamondbacks, Giants have the last three spots that are out of the playoffs trying to get in. Out of those six teams, the worst one over the last 10 games is the Diamondbacks. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games. If you're tired of my opinion on the Diamondbacks and my mini little rant, let's go to manager Torrey Lovello.
Yeah, you talk about frustration. I think as we're watching this game unfold, I think our frustration was probably mounting, we just didn't get it done. We all know what's in front of us. We know the situation. We couldn't go out there offensively and string together some consistent at bats with some consistent approaches. I think our chase and some critical moments was there. We were a little too aggressive. So, I mean, the intention is good. Everybody wants to go up there and be the guy offensively, but I think we just got to slow the game down, get some count leverage, let the ball come to us, realize the pressure's on the pitcher, and then go to work. It's in have an approach, have a plan, and be stubborn to it, and impact the baseball and reverse the game or reverse the inning. We got those types of hitters. But, you know, look, Freeland was doing his job. He's done it to us in the past, and we just didn't make any adjustments. To me, that's the name of the game. He's going up there offensively. He's making some adjustments as you're interpreting and getting information and then passing it along to the next guy. We just didn't do that very well today. We came out with a good intention. We had a good plan. It was working. And then I think we just started to chase a little bit. And I just, you know, whether the energy was there or not, I felt like the guys were engaged, and they were out there with the best intentions, just couldn't get the job done. But it was just a very awkward feeling day.
No credit to MLB.TV. Why in the world do you not air an entire post-game press conference or put it up on a YouTube channel where fans can watch? I have no idea. There's one thing there that Torrey said at the end about the energy, and it was an odd day. And he was asked about the fans. And there were 13,000 fans there. Now, I'm very careful of ripping fans when I'm not there. Okay, now am I going today? Yes. But you look at yesterday's game. You're dealing with a team that's only one game out of a playoff. Or at the time, I think it was a half game up in a playoff spot. They were tied with the Reds. So they're tied with the Reds for a playoff spot. So you are in the middle of a huge playoff push, and you have 13,000 fans in a game. We're not even talking, like, 18 to 20 is not very good. You only have 13? Players need to go play no matter what. Do your job. And I've already ripped the players. But when you see that, listen, crowds affect things without, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Crowds affect the results. And it can be very hard for a player to walk out and say, obviously nobody cares. But as a player, you've got to be professional enough to say, hey, I care, and you go do your job. But I get, and Torrey said, you know what, I don't want to talk about the fans. But you could tell it weighs on them. And so we do like to get on Ken Kendrick, and I think Ken Kendrick had a bad offseason as an owner. But at the same time, if Ken Kendrick was here right now, and I asked him about why maybe he didn't spend as much money or why he didn't buy out Madison Bumgarner right from the beginning and never let him see the light of day, and if he would have said, you know what, Doug, I don't trust our fan base. We've had some teams fight for the playoffs and nobody shows up. And if nobody's showing up, I'm not going to put a ton of money into the team. He's got a point. And you could say, Doug, I'll show up as soon as he puts money into the team. Well, this reverse psychology, how's that working out for you? Because we don't have, this team doesn't have the support that it deserves. I think they should get ripped, but 13,000 fans, that's more than just, hey, ripping them for a bad July. That's like, hey, what's going on? Like, what else did you want? This is a team that was supposed to win about 75 games, and they're on pace to be about 4 or 5 games above 500. They're playing very important games in September, and we're not even talking about like a 25,000-person crowd. 13,000. That's barely a minor league attendance. That's crazy that it was that low. That's only 6,000 more than the Mercury listed. I don't know if the Mercury are lying. Mercury had about 7,000 fans at the game. So a major league team that's battling for a playoff spot could only outdraw the worst WNBA team in almost the history of the WNBA. Could only outdraw them by 6,000 fans. Now that's weird. Not ripping you, just pointing out, hey, this is the ramifications of all of our decisions. Now, maybe it's the Diamondbacks' fault for choosing the outlets that they have. Of choosing Bally Sports Arizona, of choosing whatever radio station they're on. I can't remember. I'm entertained by that. Let me throw you a curveball, Jeff Weir Production, before I hit the next revenue-generating portion of the program. Do you have the Nikki Blue from the Mercury?
I can get it quickly.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank you. I like that answer. So the since I mentioned the mercury, I should bring it up. You got it? Wow, I can get it quickly. Okay, the mercury, I got it. Hello, Jeff Weir Production. Washington 100, Mercury 77. I usually, I care about our local teams. I want them to win. I give you scores, and then I don't know much about the Mercury. I admit to you openly, I don't care much about the Mercury. I have no problem if you do care a lot about the Mercury. But when I heard this, I don't care whether this is a Mercury topic or not. Let me tell you how much I want to like Nikki Blue. I did not appreciate the last coach at all. I felt like the last coach cared more about making political statements than winning basketball games. And I thought the last coach was just full of excuses all the time. Just was not a fan. Okay, good. Vanessa Nygaard's gone. I really want to like Nikki Blue. I really do. And then last night, she was talking about how Washington was playing with a purpose, how Washington was playing with energy. You could see they were playing for something, okay? Those are the comments she kept making about Washington and talking about their energy. So then somebody, brilliant media question, said, well, how do you feel about your team's energy?
I didn't think we gave our best effort like we usually do, but partially because I think our numbers are pretty limited, and you know it's really tough as far as like consistency wise, and we just don't have enough players right now.
What? First of all, how does your energy affect your players? We don't have enough players right now? Okay. I don't know enough about the Mercury, but that only means one of two things to me, okay? We don't have enough players is either a slam on Matt Ishbia, and you mean the actual sheer numbers of players you're running low on. You don't have enough human beings, and they get tired. And now you don't have enough human beings to sub in to go in. Or you're ripping the players you have. Well, we've got a lot of stiffs in a jersey, but we just don't have enough players. Okay, I don't care how you meant that. That's a slam on somebody. And either way, I love honesty. That's not honesty, though. That's an excuse. You don't have enough players, so you're either the coach ripping the players you have instead of coaching them up, or you're ripping ownership for saying you don't have enough human beings that are playing basketball. And then I got to look at you and say, have you communicated this? I mean, I'm sure Matt Ishbia cares much more about winning a Suns championship than a Mercury championship. But one thing we have seen, this guy doesn't want to be embarrassed. And if you'd say, hey, do you realize we're playing basketball with seven people and we're allowed to have 14? I guarantee you're at least going to have 11 or 12 by the end of the day. What does that mean? We just don't have enough players. And then, oh my gosh, even if it's totally true. I mean, even if you've asked Matt Ishbia for human beings, he's given you human beings, and five people got hurt in the layup line, and you're going into a game with only seven people. I'm still not coming out after the game and saying, we just don't have the players. I'm coming out after the game and saying, I don't care that I have seven people. This is the chance of a lifetime every time you step on the court. Have you ever poured liquid metal? I have poured liquid metal. Do you know how hard it is to make a living as a junior melter? Yes, I was the junior melter. Pouring liquid metal into shells, trying to make money for your family. At the time, I made $6 an hour, and my life was on the line almost every day. That's hard. And now you get to go play basketball. And you're going to play without energy? Well, we only had seven. I don't care how many people you have. How does anybody step on that floor without the pride and down to their soul and say, look what I get to bring to the table? This isn't a Mercury topic. This is a professional sports topic. I will never understand excuses. And if I hear one, I'm going to find it and I'm going to bring it to your attention. And I want you to disagree. That's what Town Hall Tuesday is for. If you look at that and say, no, I like her level of honesty. She's just basically saying everybody else around me sucks. Okay, great. I just heard that last night, and I thought, what are you talking about? We just don't have the players. All these people around me, they're just beneath me. I can't coach this. Oh, my gosh. All right. Sorry that I felt like I just had to get that off my chest. Coming up next, let's talk some college football. Got some Kenny Dillingham to talk to you about and some interesting numbers in the NCAA Top 25. It's coming up next. This is Doug Frantz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
It's hot. We've had a pretty hot summer here in Arizona. Who can you trust with your air conditioning? There's only one place my family has ever trusted in Arizona, and that's Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. Call 602-2-REPAIR, that's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. And the reason why I suggest them to you as passionately as I possibly can is I know they've showed up on time to my home every time, and they've gotten it right the first time every time, and they've treated me fairly every time. What else can you say? Plus, they don't charge anything for nights, weekends, emergencies. That means something, because when your air conditioner goes out in the summer in Arizona, that's an emergency. You need repairs fast, and you can trust Parker & Sons. How do I know? Because my family does. 602-2-REPAIR. That's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons. Rosati Sports Pub in Chandler. It's on Ray and McQueen. Sounds like a sports bar. What's the difference? You walk in and they actually have games on TV with the sound on. How many times do you walk into a supposed sports bar and they've got loud music on or somebody playing live or some kind of trivia game going on and you're there to watch the game? If you're like me, a simple guy, give me my pizza, give me my wings, give me my cold beer and make sure I can hear the Suns and D-backs, then you want Rosati Sports Pub at Chandler. All members of the Unplugged Army, welcome. Rosati Sports Pub, give me the game.
Talk ASU, U of A fans, I'm not letting you down. I just didn't hear anything thrilling. And that's not a rip. I just, in my U of A prep, I didn't really hear anything that I thought's going to grab you. So I didn't grab any. And as I'm getting ready to talk Sun Devils, I've already talked Cardinals. If you're watching me live right now on WTSMTV.com, thank you. If you're not watching me live, you may not realize that you can, but every weekday morning, we're the only place in the city, the only place in the state of Arizona where you can watch 6 hours of morning programming live. Whether you want to watch me in the morning while you're getting ready as a plus member of WTSMTV.com from 6 to 8, and as soon as you sit down in the office, bam, flip it over and watch Steve McCollum in the main event. And if you want a quick wrap-up, but also things to look ahead for on the rest of the day in a kind of a high-energy way, then you're going to want to watch Ion Sports, Izzy on Sports, iOS. I like calling it all those names, to be quite honest. That's like terrible marketing on my part, but I just like all those names all at the same time. As Isaiah's Izzy Jackson takes you through from 10 to noon. But you only get to watch it live if you're a plus member. As I was getting ready to talk Sun Devils, I looked over and studied some things, saw one thing, then saw a second thing, and then it reminded me of a third thing, okay? So number one, let me tell you what I just saw, is a link to an article in Pro Football Talk that's very interesting. And Pro Football Talk then reads a GQ article. So I'll tell you who wrote this in just a minute, but this isn't GQ. For those of you watching, I'm sorry I'm turning my back, but I want you to be able to take a wild guess what this is. Quote, I've always been able to choose the team I've played on, and then everything's been scheduled for me. But now, going into this next part of my career, it's weird because it's so uncertain. You don't know anything. You can't control anything but you and how you act. That's honestly the weirdest part for me, is the uncertainty. Then here's a quote from his father. The funky thing about the NFL draft process is he'd almost be better off not being drafted than being drafted first. The system is completely backwards. The way the system is constructed, you go to the worst possible situation, the worst possible team, the worst organization in the league because of their desire for parity. That team gets the first pick. So it's the gift and the curse.
Tell me if all of that, when you hear worst organization, makes sense. When I tell you, the person that said that was Caleb Williams and his father, Carl. You! Granted, it is not NFL money, and it's not NFL money twofold. Caleb Williams still has another year of eligibility left if he wants to use it. He could play the 2024 season at USC. And listen, it's good. It's really good money. It's a little over $3 million a year if you get drafted number one overall. It might even be four. I can't remember. And you're potentially set for you know, family-changing money if you get big time in year five and you get your second extension, or you basically get a quarterback-level franchise tag, which is what you could earn in the fifth year of your contract. So you want to get to that year five as quickly as possible. And every year you stay in college, you're delaying your age of getting that first big money contract. And then that affects whether or not you can get the second big money contract. Okay? So there's an enormous advantage to getting out of school and getting to the NFL as soon as you're ready. Keep that in mind when I say this. But he's got NIL deals out the wazoo. And he's the best quarterback in the country, and he plays in the hottest market at USC in Los Angeles. He's not going to make the same amount of money playing for the Arizona Cardinals, but he's still going to make seven figures playing for USC. So what would you choose? Play for an organization that never, since they've moved, have actually developed a quarterback from draft to fruition, with all that's hanging over the Cardinals, or stay in school, go back to USC, and be the quarterback again? You have three options. Comply with the draft and go to the Cardinals. Enter the draft and tell the Cardinals you'll never sign with them. Or three, stay in school. And it would be very simple to tell the Cardinals, listen, I'm never going to play for you. So here's how this is going to go. We are going to put our name into the NFL draft, and we're going to stay in there until the last possible moment of college football. And if you don't trade the rights to the number one pick, by the time that deadline hits, I'm out. I'm going back to USC. So you decide what you want to do, but we're never going to trust you. Okay? Never. I find this is a fascinating article, especially, and again, this is Pro Football Talk article, but it's quoting the Williamses in GQ. So therefore, again, now that I told you who's saying it, remember, this is the father of the player. The funky thing about the NFL draft process is he'd almost be better off not being drafted than being drafted first. It's better to not even get drafted than to go be a Cardinal, is what he's saying. The system is completely backwards. The way the system is constructed, you go to the worst possible situation, the worst possible team, the worst organization in the league. If he gets drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, I won't have a credential, but my first question to Caleb Williams would be, your father said last year in a GQ article that the system is messed up because you're going to get drafted by the worst organization in the league. Were you talking about the Cardinals? We know he was. Listen, this is no longer speculation. This is no longer, hey, Caleb Williams might do this. This is the first shot over the bow of telling the Arizona Cardinals, you better be satisfied that Kyler Murray is your 2024 quarterback, because it's sure not going to be me. That's what they're saying right now. How are the Cardinals going to react to that? Because I'm sure Monty Austinfort's grand plan was to go get Caleb Williams for next year. And Caleb Williams right now is saying, I ain't coming. Now, who's bluffing? Okay? Somebody's bluffing.
And oh my gosh, is Michael Bidwell about ready to destroy this franchise? Because I still don't believe in Kyler Murray. And then he's going to be your quarterback in 2024. And I guarantee you their grand scheme is to tank for Caleb Williams. And it's not, right now, it's not going to work. So that's point one about the Cardinals. Now, point two and three, why am I playing with this rubber band? Sorry, I had to throw that away. I had to get it out of my hand. So the other two things are a tweet. This is usually for Town Hall Tuesday, but this really made me laugh when I just saw this tweet in which let me give credit to who it is. This is at Wolverine M2, and he says, "Hey, Unplugged Doug, I just wanted to relay that the Cardinals to go winless this season is plus 1,600. Thank you. I'm on it." Now, what plus 1,600 means is if you bet $100 and the Cardinals go 0-17, you win $1,600. Now, here's the way I look at this in my world, okay? If I bet $5 on the Cardinals to go winless, five measly dollars, I win three cases of beer at Costco. I win four cases of beer at Costco. About three. I'm sorry. I am placing that bet. And Cardinals fans, God bless you. I want you to be happy. I will be happy for you if the Cardinals shock the world and go to the playoffs. Your pain, you deserve success. But I can't help but tell you, I'm all over that. Three cases of beer if the Cardinals never win. Oh, yeah. And then that made me think, at Wolverine M2, let me make you laugh. Let me come back at you and make you laugh at something I saw yesterday. This is from Kyle Odegaard. Give him credit, former reporter for the paid-for media by the Cardinals. They pay people to talk well about them, and Kyle Odegaard kind of got a conscience and said, "This is dumb. I don't want to be paid to talk good about you anymore when there's nothing good to talk about." So he left, and now he covers all of football. And Kyle Odegaard wrote, "Here are the betting annals right now for who's going to score the first Cardinals touchdown in game one." Now, this is only game one, okay? So you decide who you would bet on, okay? The in a sense, worst odds, but you could argue best odds. Your lowest pay is if you go with James Conner, but that's your safest bet. So James Conner, the number one choice of Las Vegas to score the first touchdown of the season for the Cardinals against Washington. Here's why it's important that we stress against Washington and not the first touchdown of the year. Because the person that's scheduled second, the second best player on the entire Cardinals organization to score a touchdown against Washington, to score the first touchdown against Washington, is no touchdown scored. Have you ever seen that player? No touchdown scored. Vegas is saying that once you reap, like Marquise Brown, Trey McBride, one of whoever's starting quarterback, picking up a fumble and DJ Humphrey scoring, a kickoff return, the second player to score, the second best chance to score a touchdown, all of you have less of a chance of scoring a touchdown than the Cardinals do of not scoring one at all. I've never heard of something like that. Your team is so bad, we think James Conner will score the first touchdown for you. But if we're wrong, we believe nobody's scoring a touchdown for you. And you're going to lose this game 24-6. And maybe we'll allow Prater to have a couple field goals. Just let that, whoa. You're that bad. Okay, I spent way too much time on Cardinals, but I found that stuff way too funny. Somehow, I'm going to cram in Kenny Dillingham in 6 minutes. There's a couple Kenny Dillinghams I didn't get a chance to get to yesterday that I was really interested. No, Siri, I don't want maps up right now. Wrong button. I want to go to the things from yesterday I had from CKD that I didn't get a chance to go to. Let's talk about the game. Kenny Dillingham. Oh, wait. You know, I need to ask you this question, Jeff Weir Production. Am I done on breaks?
We have one more break.
Oh, did I butcher that segment? Hopefully I was entertaining. Hopefully all of you thought I was funny, that I was dumb right there. Let's see. So that means I've only got 3 minutes left, so I'll cram it in what I got. Here's Kenny Dillingham talking about Oklahoma State's defense and what he expects and what the offense needs to do.
Yeah, they're big. They're extremely big. When you talk up front, I mean, their average weight is 290 pounds roughly with the three down linemen. So they're very, very big. Their safeties, obviously, they're a monster defense or whatever you want to call it, three high safety defense. So they play with two safeties and a quote-unquote monster linebacker, and they remove their mic from the field and put them back at 8 yards to 12 yards, depending on the call. So they have three guys that are like big jumbo athlete safeties back there, and then longer corners. So big, long, physical team. That's how you can play them on defense. On offense, their interior guys are big. They want to run the football. There's an emphasis on that. You can see the difference from last year to this year that they want to run the football, being more 12 personnel. They recruited more tight ends in the transfer portal, so it shows up. And then they want to get you in tempo calls, and they want to ISO a player to the field in one-on-ones and FIB formations, trying to create those one-on-ones.
Kenny is interesting the way he answers questions. He goes into hardcore football talk, and I think he looks around the media to see if any of them have any idea what he's talking about. And that humors me. Okay, first of all, CEO Chris Jeffweir Production, great job. Great job today getting all that ASU stuff for me. And we played one, and we're going to have to go to a break. So thank you. But let me explain what he just said there, because that's really deep. He goes, they play three high with a monster, or really two high, blah, blah, blah. Okay, have you ever played roulette? Have you ever played roulette? It's not a hard game. Person spins a marble. You put money on the board, and then they go like this. Okay, no more bets, and then you watch and see where the marble goes. But if you want to Google just roulette board and see the board, ignore the zeros on the top. And the rest of the board has columns going up and down. And it'll say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So one column is 1, 4, 7, and all the way down. And then the middle column, 2, 5, 8, all the way down, like that. That's what it means to kind of have a three high safety look. It's basically, imagine you're betting the whole column. Okay? There's three columns, and you say, I think the marble's going to land on one of these columns on the left. I think the ball is going to land on a number that's in the middle column. So you bet the middle, okay? That's kind of what it means to be three high. That each guy, it's like a baseball outfield. So I have three outfielders, and the left fielder is in charge of everything on the offense's left. The center fielder is in charge of everything down the middle, and the right fielder is in charge if the offense throws the ball to their right. And you keep the play in front of you. But then he goes, they play with a monster. And what he means by that is, instead of putting a deep safety, they put basically a linebacker. And they, instead of saying too deep, and a too deep zone means cut the field in half. Imagine playing the outfield in baseball and you only have two outfielders. So you have one in left center field, one in right center field. You guys take everything. That's what a two-deep zone is, for the most part. So you have those two guys. Well, he is saying, no, they don't play too deep. They play with their safeties out wide, and then they trust a big linebacker to drop about 8 to 10 yards back. And if you want to run, they believe he's fast enough and big enough to come in there and plug the run. But if you want to throw over their head down the middle, then they believe this guy is fast enough and smart enough to be able to get back and not allow plays to go over his head. That's asking a lot. If you can do it, man, is that a deadly defense. What that also is explaining, that therefore you're going to have a lot of combination routes to try to pull him out of the way. So you're going to have a guy try to go deep on a post route to therefore confuse that deep safety on the right side and that monster, hoping they both go back, and then you're going to have a combination route where you have a guy that's on the right-hand side that whoever runs that post, you're going to then run somebody else underneath it. So you hope to be able to have an open receiver about 11 yards down the field, right down the middle of the field. And then that monster has dropped back too far. Or you're hoping that to push that monster and that other safety together, and then you run underneath them in a corner route. Everything I just described, what does that really mean? It means protection. It means we have a lot of long-running routes, combination routes, and if they hit Rashada, we're a dead duck. I have a meeting tomorrow with the offensive coordinator of ASU. I'll tell you how that goes on Friday morning. I think we're going to talk a lot about those two things. I'll tell you how that goes. But, hey, keep that quiet, okay? That's between you and I. All right. I owe Steve McCollum a beer because I got in too deep of a conversation with that, and I need to hit the last commercial break. And then Steve McCollum from the main event and Versus Vegas coming up next. This is Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass.
Burrito Express started with my father about 25 years ago. He got laid off and decided that he needed to do something to provide for his family. My brother and I were older teens, 17, 18 year old, and I'm going to do a trial out of my house. So literally we decided we're going to start out of his house. So we delivered menus in a square mile area, literally started delivering burritos out of our home in Mesa, Arizona. And after about a month, he said, let's do this. Went and found his first location. And believe it or not, that's how it started. We started with one location back in 1995. Now we're where we are now.
It's big, it's juicy, it's meaty. Get your burrito at Burrito Express. If you're having a hangover, a bad day, even a good day, still get your burrito at Burrito Express. It will make you feel better.
Versus Vegas coming up in a second. And I somehow I feel like the hole got moved. I'm going to disagree with what happened last night at Chase Field. I'll explain why in a while and try to explain to Vegas I deserve my money back. But before I do that, it's time for Steve McCollum to join us from the main event. They're coming up from 8 to 10 with Dale Hellestray. Steve, I think the more breaking news is a GQ article that came out. I admit it's breaking to me because I didn't see it. But
you don't read GQ?
Well, I do not get GQ. You can't tell by my outfits that I wear and my flips.
I'll start bringing my subscription in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Please do. But I wouldn't have known it if it wasn't for a Pro Football Talk article. But did you hear those comments from Caleb's dad and kind of read it to him the same way I did, that it's the first official shot over the bow at the Cardinals?
No, it's this happens every year for the draft, man. You're reading into it because it's the Cardinals. But every year, the number one guy that's projected to be number one, especially when that quarterback, right? It happened to Eli Manning, John Elway way back in the day. This happens all the time.
Why? What do you mean? Those are the examples of guys that forced the hand of the other team.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm getting at. There's always this, you know, cry that the draft is unfair, you know, to the good players. I've always said the draft is unfair to players because imagine being so good at your craft that you go to the crappiest organization, right? That would be like you graduating college and they're like, you know, hey, you got to go work at X company that's going to file for bankruptcy in 2 years instead of you choosing where to go.
Go deeper on what you mean then, because what I'm reading into is this is the first shot over the bow at the Cardinals that, hey, I don't want to play for you. You have to trade me.
No, it's,
or you have to trade the rights. And that's exactly what Elway did. Baltimore Colts were going to draft him. He didn't want to play for ASU's own Frank Cush and forced to trade. And then Eli told the same thing to the Chargers. Now, what was weird about that is the Chargers still drafted him. And nobody had known at the time. Well, somebody did. The Giants did. But nobody had known that they had already worked out a pre-draft trade only if the Giants were going to be able to draft the quarterback that the Chargers wanted. I can't imagine what would have happened if that didn't really happen.
But you're going off the premise that the Cardinals even want to draft this kid. They could go out and levy this number one pick to get a ton of draft picks on top of it.
I don't know at all. I'm not talking about this from the Cardinals' point of view. I'm saying it's clear to me from the Williams' family point of view. They're telling the Cardinals we're not coming.
If my kid was a number one draft pick, I would be in front of GQ. Also saying the NFL draft is unfair. We deserve to go to a team. Oh, we deserve to go to the Bengals. Get Joe Burrow out of there. We deserve to go to the Bengals because they're a good team. Absolutely, you'd be saying that if your kid was out there. Happens every year. It's fine. What's the threat? Go back to college? Okay. Go back to college. See you later. We'll see you next year, kid. Where he can have a down year, he could get injured, like you said. Look, it's all about that rookie clock, right? He wants to get pigeonholed for that first contract. It's all about that second contract to go in there, especially going to SC, right? Don't do what Matt Leiner did and stick around for an extra year because you love college, you're going to say. Don't do that because then your career fails, right? No, you go out as quickly as you can. It's that second contract. It's all bloviating and BS. And if you mean it, then stay in college. college. Come out now and say you're going to stay in college if you mean it. Otherwise, it's all just talk.
Do you think the Cardinals are tanking?
Well, absolutely. They're setting up for next year with all their draft picks.
If they're not tanking for Caleb, what are they tanking for?
To set up for draft picks going into next year. Okay. They're going to have a ton of free agent money next year. Kind of with like what the Bears did last year, right? What the Bears have, like $80 million in free agency money going into this year. You pull it back. They have 1,000 draft picks. I know that's an exaggeration. Almost. What is it? 24 draft picks. Then if you trade that number one draft pick because you have two first-round picks this year, you trade that number one that you're supposedly going to get, you can end up with what, 4 or 5 more draft picks next year. On top of that, Cardinals are setting it up for next year to start the youth movement and the growth of this team next year.
I read into what Carl said. I'm looking at Carl. When Carl says you have to go to the worst organization, we all know exactly who he's talking about.
Well, but that's the case every year for the number one draft pick.
Is it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's the worst team, but is it the worst organization?
Come on, the Colts have had the number one draft pick. They're a terrible organization. Oh, no, you're just reading into it too much, yeah, I think.
I'm going to stand on this one, and I think you'll be proven horribly wrong.
Well, let me ask you this.
You will owe me a beer.
If somebody else had the number one draft pick, would you be saying the same thing?
If they said this same line, yes.
I've heard this line so many times in draft. And it came from his dad on top of it. Yeah. Get out of here. You know, the quarterback, Cam Newton's dad, you know, talked a lot before the draft, stuff
you
like that.
You got that right. However, yeah. Cam Newton's dad didn't even have a relationship with Cam, so that was a little different. But you're right. Yeah, right. He did say so all that
it's
stuff.
A constant thing. And is it a shot across the bow? Absolutely. Because, like I said, would you want to go to a team, and not just the Cardinals, but I mean, you could put Houston in there. Would you want to go to a team that consistently is bad in the NFL?
Well, at least Texas doesn't have state income tax, so maybe you would want to.
That's.
What's coming up?
Of course, college football talk, AP poll. I found out what Sanders' kid, the quarterback, is making in NIL money. We're gonna see a generation of kids, I think, coming up that are going to play college football, be successful at it, and then just not go to the pros. And Caleb Williams might be the first.
Wow, interesting. Thank you. Column of the main event. Dale Hellestray and Izzy Isaiah Jackson will be along with him coming up in just 10 minutes. He's here every weekday morning from 8 to 10. I want to dispute the results. What happened at Chase Field last night did not really happen. I went 2-1 yesterday. And listen, gamblers who actually spend real money, okay, I spend $5. Gamblers who spend real money would always be happy with a 2-1 record. They would be thrilled. You tell them, hey, you're going to be 67% correct on your picks, they're going to be happy all the time. So I should be happy with my 2-1. But it's the game I missed that is just dumb. I said the Arizona Cardinals, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Colorado Rockies would play, and they would be over the 9 runs. I was never able to find an over 8.5. I was hoping to find an over 8.5. I could not. So I had the over 9. Rockies won 3-2. So in this game, the Rockies batted first, and the leadoff runner scored in the first inning. Then the Diamondbacks came in the bottom of the first, and the leadoff runner scored. So it's 1-1 after one inning. And they couldn't muster another 8 runs to give me the win against Kyle freaking Freeland and Brandon Pfaadt. Two of the worst statistical starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. And we had a 3-2 game? What is that? So, Vegas, something was wrong. The humidifier was turned up too much in the back closet. It's really the humidor. Was turned up too much. Something was wrong with the... Somebody investigate. There's no way that game was 3-2. I demand an investigation. Bud Selig, what are you doing? You can just come back and be in charge of something for a day. So I went 2-1. I took the Toronto Blue Jays to beat up on Oakland. That was a weird game. It was nothing-nothing in the 7th. And I admit I started to get a little nervous. And then the Blue Jays won 7-1. There's the A's for you. So I got that game right. And I like Tampa Bay on the money line. I didn't have great juice on that. I didn't have the courage to take Tampa Bay on the run line. That means take Tampa Bay to win at least by two. So I would have had much better odds and done a lot better if I would have taken Tampa Bay to win by two. I said, no, I think this game is going to be too close. Guess what happened? Tampa Bay went into extra innings, which shows I was right. It's going to be too close. Tampa Bay won, which shows I was right because it's going to be too close. Just bet the money line. But Tampa Bay scored two runs in the 11th inning and won 8-6. I would have been right if I would have bet on the run line, and I did not. No onions, and I kind of win. Ah! But no way would you have talked me out of that bet. So I go 2-1 yesterday, 965, 870, 4-1. However, still below the magic of 53%, where I've got to be if I want to actually earn your respect as a picker. So today's games today. I'm a smart man. Today's games. Today. I've got four of them for you. I'm going to take Milwaukee minus the 1.5 on the run line against Pittsburgh. Brewers are throwing a good pitcher. Brewers are throwing Freddie Peralta. Pirates are going with a bullpen day, so I like the Brewers. I got Minnesota, but only on the money line against Cleveland. The juice isn't bad. Minus 125. Great juice if you believe in the run line at plus 130. But I'm like, you know what? Minus 125 ain't bad. And just to have that extra little cushion, I like it. So I'm going to take Minnesota on the money line on the road to Cleveland. I believe in Toronto beating up on Oakland again. So I like the Blue Jays covering the run line on the road in Oakland. And I'm going to do it. I haven't written it down yet, so I got to write it down. AZVCOL over the 9.5. There's no way you're going to have two offenses embarrass themselves again with two below average pitchers that are going today. Zach Davies. Now, granted, let's be fair to Zach, something I don't think he has deserved in a long time. Zach Davies, one of the worst statistical pitchers in Major League Baseball, 2-5 with a 6.45 ERA and a ridiculous 1.54 whip, right? He's really, really bad. However, in the two starts since he's come back off of IL, that's the first time I said IL correctly. I usually still say the DL or the IR. It's the injured list, and I finally got that right. In the two starts he's had since, he's 1-0. He has a 1.64 ERA. That's it, 1.64. And he's pitched 11 innings, so at least that's legit. And batters are batting .225 against him right now. Hey, that's really decent. And even the BABIP at .286 shows that it's not luck. Sorry that I went like all analytical on you with the BABIP drop. But that means it's not all luck. He's pitching that well. I admit I'm being kind of a jerk to Zach Davies. No way are you going to keep pitching that well. I believe the true you is somewhere in between the trash you were putting up earlier and this brilliance that you've got going now. So I think the Diamondbacks win, but not enough to bet on it. But there's no way these two bad pitching teams can shut each other down again. I like getting up to 10 runs, especially when you see how many guys out of the bullpen the Diamondbacks had to use yesterday. So I'll take the over 9.5. That does it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged, presented by Whirlwind Golf Club at Wild Horse Pass. Still loving everything that happened on Friday. Sweet Lou, thank you very much for everything you're doing for the Unplugged Army. We just had a great time out at Whirlwind. And listen, if you haven't thought about it, Civlic is an unbelievable place to stop and have a happy hour, stop and have a beer, stop and have lunch for a meeting. It's fantastic. So really think of Civlic for a chance to go to lunch. If you're in the Scottsdale area, you got to go to Bell's Nashville Kitchen in Old Town. If you're in Chandler. You got to think of Rosati's, the official sports bar of Doug Franz Unplugged. If you want the, by far, the best burrito in the city, then you want Burrito Express, especially those breakfast burritos. They are fantastic. Angel says, get the chorizo. That's incredible when they drop that on you. And then, any issues with your air conditioning? We're getting back up to around 115 over the weekend. Join the Parker family plan now. 602-2-REPAIR. That's 602, the number 2, then REPAIR for Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. The main event with Steve McCullough is up next. I'll see you tomorrow.